Carl, I guess let's open this up by getting a little bit about your background. How did your interest in radio begin?
First of all, I was brought up in Omaha, and that's where Todd Storrs developed the Top 40 format. And I was a witness to that. As I got older, I began to realize there are radio stations in between other radio stations that were distant. And I really got sucked into radio then. And of course, as I approached high school, Top 40 kind of ruled, and I was listening to that a lot as well, and just loved radio. And I went into electronics, got a ham license, just radio fascinated me.
Omaha, that was really a pretty amazing market for radio all the way, you know, from the 40s, the 50s, some legendary stations, a lot of big time people came out of Omaha and Lincoln and that general area.
Well, the biggest mark that was made in Omaha was Todd Storrs, and he developed the Top 40 format when radio was still clinging to the block programming of networks. Networks were dying out. Top 40 was developed in Omaha, and as I mentioned earlier, I was witness to it. I listened to KOWH in the early years as it was growing and just turned into a monster station. So that's probably where my interest really started.
So how did you get from Omaha to Boulder? What was the story there?
Well, I just wanted to get out of the house after graduation, and I had friends in Denver. And I was working towards my first phone license because I figured that was a great inroad into radio. I noticed a lot of guys get their license, they become combo jocks, and that's how it starts for them on an all-night show or an evening show.
And a combo jock at that time was somebody who worked at the transmitter but was also had to be there because of the FCC requirements.
That's right. You needed that first phone license.
They would put a little console or a little board of some sort and give you a stack of records and said, you're now a radio pronouncer.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. And I started out in Boulder. When I first got my first phone, I finally passed it in Denver. And KDEY in Boulder, Colorado was being put on the air as a new station by the Prathers. And of course, their engineer doing that was Steve Brumell. And I just went up there and applied for a job. I knew they could at least want a babysitter for the transmitter. And that was my first job, just babysitting the transmitter during the day.
Of course, Ken and Misha also were, for all intents and purposes, started Katie and Casper then.
Yes, they did. I'm kind of curious about how they did that, because when they got to Boulder, I think they were kind of blindsided by the fact that, you know, they were right in the shadow of all the Denver stations, and they just had a real struggle with KDEY. In fact, the station went silent some years later after they had to sell it.
And you were hired by Steve Brumell?
I was hired as the babysitter engineer by Steve, yes.
Okay.
And I'll be darned, on my first morning there, the coax cable to one of the towers shorted out, and I couldn't get the transmitter on the air. And I'm thinking, well, great, my first day, I panicked and didn't know what to do. So I called Steve, of course, and he fixed the problem in short order and, you know, went over to one tower and told the FCC we're not directional today. And that's when I first noticed what a genius he is.
A lot of people that have worked at Katie knew that Ken and Misha basically sold Katie and ended up going to Boulder to start KDEY, but we never really ever heard much of what KDEY was. What was their format?
Just a daytime station, and I couldn't really even tell you what the format was. They just had records and features. I don't even remember. All I know is the music I had to play I hadn't heard of before. except for a few instances like the establishment artists and some big band and some folk music. It was a college town, so we played a folk music hour or two. And that's all I knew. And Misha pretty much ran things. Ken, I never understood what he was doing in radio.
He primarily was in sales, from what I understand, at what was the precursor to K2 Radio. And he was one of the salespeople there. And then when they put KATI on the air, he was one of the initial announcers, but he was also on the sales staff.
They did pretty well with KATI, didn't they?
They did. As the story goes, Pat Meenan became involved because the Prathers had set up their studio in the basement of that was called the Katie Cave. Pat Meenan was a certified public accountant. His office was upstairs from the radio station. They needed an accountant. Somehow the arrangement was made and Pat became a part owner of the radio station. And that's how he became involved in KATI and in broadcasting that later went on to over 30 years in his career.
Well, that must have been before the McKinley House, right?
Yes. Yeah, the Katy Cave was from about 1956 to 59, and then they went to the McKinley House in 1959.
Well, the Katy Cave, where was that?
The Katy Cave was at the corner of Midwest and Walcott. It was a business building, three stories. The studios were located in the basement. There was retail shops on the street level. There were offices like Pat's office upstairs on the second floor. And it was called the Katy Cave because there were no windows in the studios. Many times during big thunder showers or whatever, the studios and the offices, water would flood in from outside. And so it was kind of a dank, smelly place, from what I understand. They weren't there very long, and then they went into the old house over on McKinley.
Are the Prathers still around?
I cannot find any sign of the Prathers. I think one of the Prathers ended up teaching at the University of Colorado Boulder.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
And I think it was Ken, and as you say, Misha kind of ruled the roost as far as the broadcasting part went. As far as I know, they stayed. They never came back to Casper or to Wyoming, to the best of my knowledge. So
I think they exited radio then.
Yeah, I think so.